If you think you can't go from politics to the divine, Carol Gold and Steve Clark are about to take you above the fray. The only agenda here is to empower you to think for yourself, ask more questions, and trust your own truth. So now, the combination talk radio has been missing. Until now, Carol Gold and Steve Clark taking you above the fray.
Hi, welcome to the show. I'm Carol Gold. Our number here is 914-803-4522. And Steve and I welcome your calls during the show or your comments in the chat room. My co-host, Steve Clark. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Carol.
We're going to talk tonight a bit about Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. Not that these subjects aren't getting beaten to death in the press, they are, but Steve and I would like to believe that we bring you, at least if not a new approach, we create new questions for you to ask regarding the candidates going into 2016. And I think the reason that we do that, beside the fact that it's kind of a civic duty, according to the Constitution, is that this is a really important election. We all know that there are lots of problems, lots of challenges, both domestically and around the globe, and they're all going to impact us, some shockingly so, probably at times when we're least prepared. And so leadership becomes a really important issue. We have gone through seven, almost 8 years of what an awful lot of people feel was a real lack of leadership, more of a bully than a leader. And so we want to go forward choosing wisely. And we've been thinking about Hillary Clinton, who seems to be the presumptive and at the moment current leader in the Democrat race. And Donald Trump in the Republican race. It isn't necessarily so that Trump will be the dominant or the lead forever until we get to the election, meaning that he may or may not get the nomination from the Republicans. But for the moment, he is the story. He is what's out there. He is driving the conversation. And so the kinds of questions that I know I've been asking myself, Steve, they have to do with leadership, number one. We really need a leader. And from where I stand, a leader has a lot more, has a lot greater need for bringing not just the ability to get political issues done with both sides of the aisle, but also to positively impact, if possible, the culture, to give us something to feel proud of, to give us something to restore our belief in our own ability as a nation to do something. And I think that Trump has tapped it. Well, let me take Hillary first. I'll just sum her up rather quickly. I don't think she has any history of showing leadership ability. I think the few times that she's been in positions that could arguably be called leadership, such as when she tried to pass health care the first time during Bill Clinton, or tried to organize something resembling universal health care, she fell flat on her face resoundingly. And in the Benghazi instance, when she was Secretary of State, therefore leader of the State Department, I think there's a similar example of her failure to lead and to show leadership quality. So if she's good at anything, she's good at leading in obscuring, obfuscating the truth, good at leading people away from the story that really needs to be looked at. And good, perhaps, at circumventing the law. Time will tell, certainly with the email issue. Where Trump's concerned, Steve, for me, I think people confuse financial success, wealth, and the ability to get things done with leadership. I think that what the country is enamored with right now is Trump's straightforward talk. He is the antithesis of political correctness. I mean, he really is the antithesis. He's almost extreme to a fault. He says things that are on the borderline at times and sometimes crosses the line of civility or the way that people, I think, ought to talk to one another in a civilized society. He also is very egotistical. Not that all politicians aren't, but his is to, again, an extreme that I find stunning. And he is combative, I believe. which can be a good quality. There's a good side to that. There's also a take no prisoners kind of it's my way or the highway side to that. And so I think what he's tapping into is the frustration, the anger of the nation, because we have been lied to, we have been manipulated, we have also been complicit in our own problems, but we desperately want someone to get this right, to turn it around. And I personally don't think it's going to come from one person, certainly not someone who has what I think are so many visible flaws, both as a person and in his policies, as Donald Trump. What do you think, Steve?
Well, there's nothing really to add to Clinton. I just think Clinton has been, essentially, she's ridden on the coattails of her husband. She's never really done anything of her own accord. All her jobs and positions of power have been a result of her husband's influence. So I really think, to be perfectly blunt, she's a non-entity. Well, Trump is a different matter. Trump inherited money, and he did a lot of good with that money by building upon it. So I want to talk the first thing on his business side. Trump is getting a lot of criticism because he went through a variety of bankruptcies. And I want to be very clear here. Trump, what he did through his company, since he had so many different projects, he ran single entity. Every project that he ran, for the most part, was a single entity unit. So basically, Trump went in and did many, many deals. And if people could invest in those specific one-off deals, and if they went under, they went under. But the people that went in knew the risk, and Trump took the risk along with them, and that investment went bad. But that's no different than what Google does or Microsoft does or what these other companies do. Is what they do is they put all their investments under one umbrella, and if that investment goes bad, everybody shares in those losses of the investment. But they pass on the profits from the other projects into the investors. It's a totally different way of doing business. And I think Trump has been unfairly maligned by the press because of these bankruptcies. But let's be clear. Everybody knew that's how the businesses were done. Every business and every individual in life has their successes and failures. And Trump has been very open about them. He's been documented them. And there's been recourses for people to get their money back through a bankruptcy proceedings, unlike, say, for example, what happened to General Motors, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, where they had all their losses papered over. So I think he's been unjustly maligned by the press for some of his business failures, when in fact he's actually been, I would say, call it very transparent. The second thing I want to address is that Trump is really tapping into two issues, right? And the two issues is, one is immigration, and the second is business. And the fact is, I think there's only one other candidate who's addressing this issue, which is Ted Cruz, in terms of the ability to go after the immigration issue. I think that the press has not understood the level of angst for the people, what the problems are in terms of immigration. I think they've papered it over. And I think there's been a weird confluence between the two parties on immigration. Democrats, because obviously it gives them voters, and for the Republicans, because I think that the Republican donors, they benefit from the cheap labor. But the average Joe on the street has been feeling that pain of illegal immigration for quite some time. So the biggest critique on the Republican Party for the last X amount of years has been, how do we grow the party? How do we get more people into the party? Well, let me tell you, Trump has been the one guy over the last, 10 or 15 years that's been able to grow the party. He's got huge Hispanic numbers that are supporting him for obvious reasons. He's going to create jobs. And he's getting huge support numbers from the black community, because the black community is the one community that has been facing, that faces a huge influx of illegal immigrants that they're facing competition-wise for business. So I think Trump has been the one guy who's been able to expand the party. If everybody doesn't like Trump or wants him to go, then he's given you the blueprint. People are tired of immigration, and they want a better business community. So I think that's been success. And you know what? All you'd have to do is copy those policies, and I think people would see the same surge in the numbers.
Well, I want to say something about the bankruptcies. I mean, the law is that, you know, a business, an individual, or a corporation has the ability under the bankruptcy code to declare bankruptcy. It is a way to start over. There are people who abuse it, and one could argue that he has. You would argue that he hasn't. But there's something more to it than just the availing yourself of the law as it exists. You know, when you say, number one, that there were remedies for people to get their money back in bankruptcy, there is a list in bankruptcy of creditors, and they start with the secured creditors first. They go all the way down to the unsecured creditors. And even among secured creditors, which are creditors who, let's say, hold a lien, and even among secured creditors, it's first filing, first in time. So meaning that you stand in line as a secured creditor based upon when your lien was filed. So early secured creditors may have a greater opportunity to collect under a bankruptcy, because a bankruptcy court determines how much goes to the creditors, and generally it's pennies on the dollar. It's not like you get in line and you get your money back if you're farthest up in line. And the unsecured creditors generally wind up with really nothing or close to it. And I would argue that the people who have been most hurt by those bankruptcies and that business model that he uses to protect himself and to be able to do individual deals, as you said, where they stand alone or fall alone on their own, is not the big money or those who invest with him, you know, who are shakers and movers, but the average person, the contractors, the workers, the employees. They're the ones that have gotten, in the vernacular, screwed every time he's done that. I know that personally. I know it from Atlantic City. I know it from a relative who owned a business within one of the Trump hotels. And Trump negotiated space for this business to come into the commercial part of the hotel. It was actually a hair salon, and it was two hair salons in two different buildings. And this person made a tremendous financial investment in fitting out the space, in creating the physical salons. And Trump, all the while, was on the verge of bankruptcy, and he knew it. So he let this person sign all kinds of documents that committed him to expenditures and whatever. And then, before the doors were ever opened on those two businesses, Trump declared bankruptcy. And those people got nothing. And the workers who had quit their other jobs to come to the new salon, there was no new salon to ever open, because the day it was supposed to open, Trump declared bankruptcy. And so it's not because it happens to be family. I know this person. But I know other stories of people, particularly in Atlantic City, because I used to live in Philadelphia and I was wired into both the political and the business communities. I know lots of stories about people who were terribly damaged by the way in which he did business. So what we always talk about with progressives is, you know, with progressives, the means justifies the end, right? So progressives, they change their look, they change their name, they change whatever, and they'll do anything to get the outcome that they want. You know, Acorn came under scrutiny for voter fraud. They changed their name, broke up their national Acorn Incorporation, and they opened in every individual state under a different name. It's a very progressive ploy. Changing global warming to climate change is a progressive ploy. You change the name, you change the way people perceive it. I think that it isn't just enough that you're a success anymore. It's easy. I don't want to be glib. I don't make money hand over fist. It's easy to make money, though. It's easy to just simply make money. It's not easy to make money and be ethical and stand by your principles, know what you believe in, and when you come up against adversity in your principles, you have an easy choice because you always choose your principle. Those are the kind of people that I'm looking for, because we have all these unprincipled people in politics. To me, he's unprincipled, A, because of the way he's done business very often, B, because of the way he speaks about women, and see, and I don't mean the Megyn Kelly thing either. I mean decades of comments that are really disturbing. And see, because he's running as a Republican, and maybe the word conservative doesn't mean anything to people. It means something to me. If you're a constitutionalist, it means something to me. He's running as a Republican. He's running as a conservative. He was a Democrat. He uses Ronald Reagan as an example. There's no comparison. Reagan spent decades transitioning from Democrat to Republican, and wrote about all of that transition and wrote volumes on his conservative viewpoint and had a long opportunity to become entrenched in those positions. Trump has been changing his positions as recently as 2 or 3 months ago. And what he recently said on Planned Parenthood, I think, is very telling. You know, he was pro-abortion, pro-choice, rather, for a very long time, until recently. And he explained what the change was. He explained that a friend was somebody who's going to have an abortion, and they didn't. Child was born, and the child's a remarkable child, and he realized that it's wrong to terminate a life prematurely. But recently, in talking about Planned Parenthood, something that I know is very dear to you and me, Steve, a topic of right to life, he said that Planned Parenthood does a lot of good for women, separate from their abortion practice, and that they shouldn't be automatically defunded, that if they just stop their abortion practice, then they should be able to be funded for all the other good that they do. When I heard him say that, Steve, my mind went to, that's like somebody saying in Germany in 1940, 38, there's this guy, and he's really very bright, and he's got a couple businesses, and one is he gasses Jews to death, and the other is he's got this really neat idea for a little beetle of a car. Would you invest in his businesses? And it's like saying, well, if he stops gassing the people, sure, I'd love to invest in the auto business. No, no, the guy is a bad guy. You don't want to be on any team he's on. Planned Parenthood is a business where I watched a video where an employee held up body parts and said, oh, look, it's a boy. They had just aborted a child, developed sufficiently limbs and arms rather and legs and body parts that they actually said, oh, look, it's a boy. If it's a boy, it's not tissue, it's a life. And if that business is so perverse and so they're so immoral and so hardened that they can be in that business, I don't want them to have money from the public troffers for anything they do. But he's not like that. He's an expedient kind of guy, which is why he's always done, if it's good for Trump, it's good. If it's good for Trump, well, when you run a country, I don't think you can think that way. And my concern is that he always does what's expedient, what will give him the win, what will give him the money, what will give him the notoriety. And I'm not looking for that in my next president. I don't know about you.
Well, I think it's fascinating, the one point. The common sense dictated, the common prevailing thought on immigration was that it was kind of something that America could no longer do anymore, that we'd have to integrate some of these people all the time. And I think the media has been absolutely shocked by the positive message that Trump has gotten. So either it doesn't make your point to me, doesn't resonate with me on that sense, because the logical point that Trump should have made is he should have taken a policy that Rubio did or somebody else. But he took a point, and again, I'll with the point on abortion, but he took a stand, and everybody thought he was crazy. Everybody said, you're ridiculous. He's going to lose very quickly.
And he says, no, I'm going to take a stand on immigration that most people probably don't like, but this is the only country, this is the only, to have a country need a border, and to have a nation that really needs a couple of things. A nation needs a border, so you know what the, you know, who's American, who isn't. You need a common culture, and you need a nation that protects citizens. And he's been right on all three. And the conventional wisdom has been he should be out of the election by now. So he said, you know, he took a, you know, in my mind, he took a principled stand on that one issue that everybody thought he would lose on. And he didn't. He's actually winning it because he's tapped into the American psyche. Because I personally think that Trump, because he's worked in business for so many years, knows the laws, knows the rules, the regulations, and has a lot of, I can guarantee you, he has a lot of Latino workers and black workers that work in his construction jobs that knows that that he knows how they feel about the country, more so than anybody else out there. To your point on abortion, I completely agree. I will not vote. You know, for me, I really kind of have, you know, in this election, I just really have three issues. One is abortion. I'll never vote for somebody who purposely kill an innocent life. Second is immigration, and third is the business, and third is business. So far Trump is, you know, two out of three. But you know, my limited test is also abortion, and if he doesn't fit that muster on abortion, then I won't vote for him. But you know, all I can say from what I've seen on his comments on abortion, that he's against abortion. So in that sense, right now, he's passing the limited test. So you know, that's where I'm at on those issues, Carol.
Well, I think you have to see. I think you have to remember, you know, he didn't write Common Sense. He didn't write the Declaration of Independence. He didn't write the Gettysburg Address. He wrote The Art of the Deal. The guy knows how to close a deal. He knows how to get what he wants out of a deal. I think he's taken all the principles that he's used in business, in negotiating, in how to move the other side along, and he talks about it in The Art of the Deal. He talks about it openly, that he's applying that to the presidency. He's applying that to this race. The Art of the Deal here, who's on the other side, it isn't the other candidates. Who's on the other side for him is the American public. He knows where he wants them. He wants them at the polls voting for him. And he's negotiating with them now. And he's using all the tactics and all the tricks that have made him a success in business because he knows how to read people, so he's reading the culture. And by the way, I don't want to take away from anything that he's done that's really right. He's right not to care about political correctness. It has paralyzed us. He's right on the border, but he's not alone on the border. He's just, again, he knows the delivery. He's a public personality. He's a television guy. He's a media guy. He's a mogul. He knows how to sell the product. So he's right on the wall, and we do need borders, and we do need a wall on the southern border, and he's right on what was the other one you named? I just lost it. Immigration and – oh, business? I don't know. He wants to tax the rich. He wanted to do it – no, he wanted to do it for the bailout. He wanted to do one big hit on the rich one time because he claimed at the time that doing that would wipe away what was then the national debt. Now he says it wouldn't be a good idea because the debt is too high. For me, that's not the issue. Would it have worked then and it won't work now? The issue is if you're a conservative and you're a constitutionalist and you're a capitalist, you don't want to tax the rich more at a one time or five times as a penalty to pay off the national debt. It's targeting a group for a specific reason, and I don't think we should be doing that. In fact, I think the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution ought to prohibit us from doing that. Having said that, I am concerned because our culture is virtually close to destruction. Our national culture. Bill Clinton didn't help with oral sex in the White House and all his affairs public. It it has, the culture has gone slowly downhill. And I don't think that we're in a position to have someone in a leadership position now who culturally will not enhance us, who will culturally either keep the bar where it is or lower it. And I'm concerned about that with him because he's all about materialism. Steve, you're a religious guy. I'm a spiritual woman. This guy said he's got lots of Bibles. People give him Bibles all the time. And he keeps them in a special place away from New York because they're his Bibles. They're special. And then the follow-up question was, does he go to church? And he said, yeah, Christmas and Easter. He goes twice a year. This is not, as far as I'm concerned, someone who ethically and spiritually is someone that I feel I can align with. Can I give him credit for speaking up and being brave? Yes, he's got enough money to do that. Can I give him credit for being right on a couple of really critical issues? Absolutely. But it's not enough anymore. We need somebody with ethics and morals because they're non-existent in this nation. They're not existent in our movies at a Hollywood. They're not existent in the culture in general. And they're not existent in our video games, and they're non-existent in politics. We can't make believe that you can keep advancing technologically and advancing economically, assuming we can pull out of this mess, and not advance sociologically at the same time. And sociologically means your moral and your ethical center in a culture. And I don't think he stands for that from what I see.
Well, yeah, I think you're absolutely correct that on the cultural rot that's taken place, that, you know, I don't know if we're ever going to come back from that. Carol, before I start, how are we on time? I think we're at 6:29 is what I have.
You're okay. You've got 3 minutes. You close it out.
The thing that I just wanted to say that I think is interesting, it's very similar to, you know, what I think is happening in China, is that for people don't know is that there was in China, there was a cultural revolution. And basically what happened in China from, I don't know, the 50s to, you know, mid 70s is basically they took all the peasants. They brought them. They took all the rich people and they made them all peasants. And there was a complete communist society. And when they realized it didn't work, they actually put the main focus on the whole society was to make money, was to grow out of this problem through capitalism. Now, there is one big distinction that I think most people don't realize is that China as a state realizes that religion is not a good thing because it has the capacity to elevate the human spirit and to make them believe something other than the state. So what happened in China is basically what became the main driving principle or the most promising good was to make money. And what's happened in China is that time and time again, is that when you have money as the overwhelming good in society, you're going to see a lot of fraud, and you're going to see a lot of bankruptcies, and you're going to see a lot of deceit. And what has most people in the financial markets concerned is because people realize that China, in many ways, is a house of cards, that the system that's been built up has an ultimate system as money as their god. And I think what's happening in the U.S. is that we have a rule of law that's much stronger, and we have a culture that's still in place. But I think clearly we're off in a direction, and we do have a massive cultural rot that, unfortunately, nothing good can come from this cultural rot. So I think you're spot on in that analogy, and you're right. We do need a cultural awakening in that sense. In that sense, I don't know if Trump is the guy for that. He has tapped on other issues. But I'd agree with that conclusion. I don't think he's the right guy for that specific skill set there.
Yeah, well, we can talk about this further in another show. We're pretty much out of time. I sometimes look at him and I think, well, almost Ronald Reagan, but lacking the ethics, the moral center, the spiritual connection, the wife. I mean, if he's elected, I hope I can get this in 36 seconds, we will have the first lady who ever posed naked in a lesbian porn movie. Hello. And on that note, ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Above the Fray podcast. I'm Carol Gold.
I'm Steve Clark.
Join us again on Thursday evening. Have a great week, everybody.
You've been listening to Above the Fray with Carol Gold and Steve Clark, from politics to the divine. Thanks for being a part of a new way to see the world. Visit our website at AboveTheFrayPodcast.com and like us on our Facebook fan page, Facebook.com/AboveTheFrayPodcast. This has been Carol Gold and Steve Clark, taking you always above the fray.